We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome back to The Pod is the Roof, the official UNC basketball podcast of the Field of 68. I am Riley Davis. I'm joined by my co-host, Jacob Karabatsis. And we have a special guest today. He is the author of Duke Sucks and Duke Still Sucks. You may recognize him from the ESPN 30 for 30, I Hate Christian Laettner. He is Andy Bagwell, first time on The Pod is the Roof. How are you doing, Andy?
I'm awesome, Riley. Thanks so much for having me on, man. It's good to be with you guys. Great job with the pod. And man, it's great to chat. And fun season so far. So I'm looking forward to chatting with you guys about it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Me and JK, I think you're familiar. This first year we started doing the podcast, and I think back to November when the two of us started, you know, putting like hypothesizing on what this team would look like. And I think both of us came into the year a little bit skeptical. Sure. JK gave me a hard time because I didn't rank UNC in my top 25 for the Almanac, the preseason publication that HeatCheck CBB, Field of 68, Three Man Weave, all combined on. But JK at the same time, like, I think you kind of deflected some of the UNC skepticism on me, whereas like you had Carolina ranked what, like 22nd? You thought they'd be like a 20 to 25 team.
Listen, but having them in the top 25 versus having them unranked.
Okay.
Different levels of faith. But they've exceeded expectations. There's no way around that. I mean, as much as we'd like to say it's UNC, we're gonna be in this position every year. After last year, Hubert completely revamping the roster. I mean, it's been a complete 360, if we're being honest. From not making the tournament in the most disappointing fashion of all time to now being upset that we're probably going to be a 2 or 3 instead of a 1. So
crazy.
The tides have turned in our favor. The last couple weeks, maybe even 3-4 weeks, haven't been the prettiest display of UNC hoops, but nonetheless, they've ended up gutting out a good amount of wins and keeping themselves in a good position coming into Saturday. So, you know, I was not as big of a hater as you, but I certainly had my I certainly had my doubts.
Hey, listen, I think like going back the last 5 years of UNC basketball, 2019, 2020, you know, the start of the downfall, the Cole Anthony year, never forget that game against Notre Dame where he had 34-10-5, I want to say. Armando was talking about it after the game yesterday. We're recording this the day after UNC got the win over Notre Dame on senior night. I was convinced that Carolina team come March was going to be a 1 or 2 seed at worst. I thought Justin Pierce was going to be a suitable Luke May replacement. I thought Christian Keeling was going to be a bucket. Like, thankfully we never even really got to March, but since then it's sort of been quite the roller coaster ride with, you know, the 6 week stretch in March into April of 2022, followed by the disappointment. And even the year before that, Roy's last year was like, you could see some potential with talent like De'Ron Sharp, Walker Kessler, both guys who are sort of crushing it in the NBA right now, two legit NBA rotation pieces. but never really came all together to where I just didn't want to get hurt again. But, you know, fast forward to March 6th, the day we're recording this, I'm just going to say it's been a lot of fun compulsively checking Bracket Matrix and the various bracketologists out there and just saying like, hey, is UNC, are we still solidly on the two line? Maybe a couple one of the sprinkles in on the one line, but I think Tennessee's going to lock that up, unfortunately. But I'll take it too. I think it's been an incredible job of Hubert to show his coaching chops throughout this season. I honestly think he probably hasn't gotten enough credit for the development that Harrison Ingram has made this year, just becoming a legit spot-up shooter. I mean, my buddy Trevor Marks with Inside Carolina had this data at one point. Like, Ingram might have had three or four, maybe five tops games at Stanford with double digits, double-digit rebounds in 2 years there, and it seems like he's a walking double-double now. Just all-around great job by Hubert with getting the most out of this roster, allocating roles well. And I've liked a lot of the ways he's managed rotation as well, but that's actually kind of where I want to turn it to Andy, because I've heard some speculation that maybe Hubert was a confidant of yours at one point in your life.
You've been doing some research, Riley. So a confidant, I would not call him a confidant, but yeah,
I had to exaggerate a little bit.
But. Okay, we'll go with it. We'll make up a story or two, but we did actually live on the same hall our first 2 years at Carolina. Hubert and I are the same age, graduated both in 92. So I, lacking of basketball talent, somehow happened on the same hall with Hubert and the rest of the underclassmen on the basketball team in the fall of 1988. And so, yeah, it's kind of wild. And so obviously really pulling for the guy, and you said earlier, I don't think he's getting the credit he deserves, nationally, for the job he's done. So confidant, no, but I will tell a funny quick story. So, I didn't really keep up with him after we graduated. I would see him here and there. Obviously he was off to the NBA after he graduated, but years later, I was on with my family in the airport, and we were getting ready to go on a vacation up to visit my sister, and she was living in Vermont at the time. And this was right before Hubert came back to coach at Carolina. He was still working at ESPN, so he was taking this flight up to Connecticut all the time, right, to go to ESPN. And we were on this same flight going to Hartford, Connecticut. And so I saw him. Obviously, I knew who he was. And I was like, I haven't seen Hubert in like 10, 15 years. I'll go up and say, hey, Hubert, I don't know if you remember me. We live in the same hall. So I brought my kids along. And I was like, kids, come over here. Like, he's an NBA player. He's playing at Carolina. He's a really nice guy. And so, here's my kids at the time were young. And so I brought him up. I was like, hey, Hubert, I don't know if you remember me and Andy Bagwell lived in the same hall. And he goes, oh yeah, you were the guys that had the party like every other weekend. And it was the one thing the guy threw up in the middle of the hallway. So I was like, oh my God, kids run away, go back to mom, So it's funny, like and he did remember that. And that's my lasting thing with Hubert. But now he never partook in any of that, guys. And I'm dead serious. Like my Hubert memory on the hall was we'd be being idiotic college students, right, drinking in the room, and he would just come by our room and like peek in and just shake his head like, no, like you guys, just that look of like, you dudes, what are you doing? And then going down and like study or something like that. But yeah, so great, great connection there. And I'm obviously like pulling for him like crazy, even though I'll be pulling for any Carolina coach. He's a great, great guy. And just as genuine as all the stories that you've heard about him.
Yeah. Yeah. I got to ask, was it in Granville?
Was in Granville. Yeah. So at that time it was the first floor of Granville South. I think they later moved to Granville West for a little while, but it was the first floor of Granville South. It was like a half floor. We had our own key to the hallway. Like you could not get in and out of the hall unless you lived on that hall. And so, my freshman year, Hubert, me, King Rice and Rick Fox were on the hall that year. Kevin Madden, wow. John Green, one of the walk-ons. The next year was the class with Matt Winstrom and Kevin Salvadori and Scott Cherry, and the class kind of pre-Montross and that crew. So it was, I lived there for 2 years, and a lot of stories that cannot be told outside of that hall, especially with guys like King Rice around at the time who knew how to have fun. Wild that I got to experience that. And a lot of the guys I do see every once in a while, I'll bump into John Green. He lives, in the area. And and a couple of other guys. So it was cool. Just totally random, but a good part of my college experience for sure.
Yeah, that's fascinating about Hubert never partaking in any of the debauchery, so to speak. It's probably one of the rare basketball players who lived maybe a little more on the straight and narrow. We had Joel Berry on a few weeks ago, and I was telling him we were reminiscing his freshman year. UNC beat Louisville in the Dean Dome on a Marcus Paige game winner, and that was his senior year at Carolina. His freshman year at Carolina was my senior year there. And I was telling him that I literally remember later that night being at La Rez and seeing Theo Pinson walk in like with a look on his face, like everybody in here knows I'm not 21. And Joel was like right behind him.
So. Of course. Yeah. But no one's going to throw those guys out. Right. Come on. He's got a big win. So no. Yeah.
I'm telling you, man, the stories could go on and on, man. The amount of times I'm a younger gun than both of you, obviously, but you know, amount of times that I would go out and the freshman and sophomore in there, and you're just like, must be nice. But hey, the one thing that really is nice is, I just want to throw a little bit of shade at Duke already. Go ahead and start Let's this go. Out. But it's crazy. You guys listen to a podcast of three people who talk about UNC that actually went to UNC. I imagine a Duke podcast could never.
But they will most certainly be throwing up the bull sign have any connection to Durham.
I mean, come on, dudes. Like, what is that? Like, you know, like Bull City. I was like, you're from Jersey. Shut up. Like, hey, I mean, come on.
And then it's always like, no, I'm not a bandwagon fan. Like, my dad's cousin's brother's sister went to Duke. Like, I have a connection. It's like, dude, did you go? Like, you don't have to go to the school, but it's like, just admit that, you know. Listen, I grew up in North Carolina. It was either North Carolina or Duke, and I chose to lean towards Duke. It's that simple. I don't need an excuse.
And JK, isn't that really a character flaw when you find someone like that? I mean, come on. How can you grow up here and say, I think I'll like Duke? That's just get that person out of your life. You know what I'm saying?
Especially when you go to a different school. It's like, all right, for example, my dad went to South Carolina. So I grew up my whole life going to Williams-Brice, going to all those games. The moment I stepped foot onto UNC's campus, I was a UNC fan.
Yeah, instant, right?
Like it's just, I don't know. It seems like logic to me.
Yeah, it is for sure. God, crazy.
Yeah. No, I mean, I agree with that, especially like, I mean, one of my best friends is I don't know if he'll ever listen to this. Maybe he'll support me.
Let's do it.
He's an NC State grad who grew up in Durham. Actually went to Trinity with like Hubert Davis's kid, so he's like family friends with the Davis family. But he's a huge Duke fan, and like will pull for Duke over NC State, like because he grew up in Durham and grew up a huge Duke fan. And this dude, for real, like he's one of my best friends. But I'm always like he was texting me, basically venting his frustrations when Duke and NC State were playing the other night, and Duke started off slow again, saying "we" in regards to Duke. I'm like, dude, they're literally playing your alma mater.
Yeah,
you met your wife there. You have great memories there. Yeah. Cheer for your alma mater.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah,
that's not even tolerated at UNC. Like, I've got a good friend that I graduated with, my guy Tyler Chilton, T Chili. If you're listening to this, I got to expose you, but
hey, let's just give shout outs to all our friends.
Let's go. What up, T Chili?
He basically roasted himself before anyone could find the picture of him, but it was him as a probably 13, 14 year old. He grew up a Duke fan, and he was in front of the Krzyzewskiville sign or whatever. And he showed it to all of us, and we made fun of him and sent the picture around and everything. And he was like, yeah, figured I'd expose myself, but like, he's a UNC fan because he went to UNC. He's not like, I grew up a Duke fan, man. This is tough. No, he's a UNC fan. That's how it is.
Uh-huh. That's good. He converted. All right, T Chili, we'll let you slide on this one, man. But we're good. We're bros now.
All right. Speaking, I'm going to bring us back on track a little bit, but we'll get to some thoughts on UNC's play recently. We'll look ahead to the UNC Duke game coming up on Saturday. I think when people are listening to this, probably be Thursday. But before we even get into that, I wanted to turn over Andy for a second, just because I know you had several cameos throughout the ESPN 30 for 30. I hate Christian Laettner. It's something I believe maybe you even poke fun at yourself a little bit in your Twitter bio. Yes, I'm that guy from the 30 for 30, something like that. But I'm
the
wanted
bald
to hear,
dude. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes, I want to hear your 30 for 30 story, just because I mean, Jacob is more of the cinema guy than I am, but I appreciate a good film, and I love that whole the whole 30 for 30 series. And would you mind sharing a little bit about how that happened? And
Sure. Yeah. No, it's a wild story. So, and yeah, I do joke about it. I like to, you know, I say I'm that crazy ranting bald dude in the film that everybody knows, but, and it's a great film, just, you know, despite my presence in it. So but it was, you know, I'm like you guys, I was a huge fan of that series of films. I mean, there's so many of them that were so, so good. And, yeah, the way that all came about was, you know, the first book, Duke Sucks, came out in 2012 and you know, actually did pretty well. We were kind of surprised at how well it kind of took off and caught on. And so from time to time, you know, much like this, we'd get a call or an email or something. Hey, we'd love to have you on the radio, talk about Duke and Carolina and stuff. So built a bit of a brand doing that. And then, so we got an email. It was like 2014, fall of 2014. And not surprising, you know, somebody shoots us an email. It's like, hey, we're making a film about Christian Laettner. We'd love to talk to you. And I was like, okay. Sometimes you have to go like, oh, is this just a Duke fan trying to get me in a room, put a bag over my head, and then leave me for dead somewhere? But yeah, you know, over the years, like I was talking to, you know, my co-author Reed Tucker, talking about, he's kind of the real writer of the. He's a writer by trade, really good writer. And so, but he's also more of an introverted guy. So when these things would come up, he'd be like, Andy, you go talk to these people. Mm-hmm. Anyway, they never really said in the email, like what it was. And the production company I didn't recognize. And so we kind of went back and forth, and he was like, well, I can't really tell you much more over in writing. I can talk to you on the phone, give you some more detail. And we were like, okay. So called him up, this guy, Rob, and he's like, hey, I couldn't, you know, I can't tell you, this is kind of, you know, lock and key, but this is going to be an ESPN 30 for 30. And dude, like my mouth dropped open. I was like, are you kidding me? He's like, yeah, I'm with Rory Karp. We did the Manning Brothers 30 for 30. And like, I was like, holy crap, this is incredible. So really, really cool moment. Of course, I was like, yep, I'm in. So they, you know, about a month or two later, I was supposed to go up to Chapel Hill to film. They called me up. They were like, hey, we're going to come to your house. Now, you know, Riley, you're married, you have a young child. Can you imagine telling your wife, like, less than 24 hours than this event taking place, that there was going to be a film crew at your house and that they were going to be immortalizing your house forever? So the cleaning was like, you know, we were getting ready for surgery the next day. So they came to the house, they filmed for like an hour. And I tried to prepare a bunch of stuff ahead of time. You know, I was trying to kind of think about what all I wanted to say. And you know, these things, you kind of know what they're looking for, right? You know, they're looking for a bit of a foil. So, a lot of these things just, I truly feel in my heart. So anyway, that happened. It was really cool. And then they go off and they're done, right? And then they leave and you're like, well, that was cool. Now what? And so months later, I hadn't heard anything, and I emailed the guy, and I was like, hey, just, you know, checking in. Did I make the cut? Am I going to be in? And he goes, oh yeah, you're in there a lot. I'm like, oh God, you know, here we go. So it was kind of wild. And so, you know, then of course we get to go to, I hear my voice in the trailer on ESPN, and then I go to premiere in New York. I meet Christian Laettner, have Grant Hill lecture me after the thing is over. The thing comes out. I blow up on Twitter. My kids think it's hilarious that people are calling me Mr. Butthurt. I mean, it was a whole thing. So it's been a wild experience. I mean, and then it doesn't quit, right? They keep airing it every year at this time. And so people will find it and hunt me down for the first time. And so, I mean, I have to be very appreciative. I feel very, very fortunate to have been a part of this incredible franchise and what turned out to be a really good movie. And it's just cool. I mean, it's just a cool experience, and obviously gave the book a second life, which I'm really appreciative of. And, and you know, everybody's got their 15 minutes of fame. I feel like mine is just ticking on in a lot of ways. So it was an incredible experience and just great to have been a part of it, for sure.
All right, I got to ask a couple follow-up questions.
Okay, shoot.
So first, you hear your voice in the trailer. I think me and JK have joked about this. I've had one goal this since starting the podcast. I want to get clipped. I want to get aggregated into like a hype video that a team does. Like, I am begging the UNC basketball social team to go back and find a clip of me saying I'm skeptical of this team and that I don't trust them. Clip that and put it in a highlight montage where I'm getting proved wrong. Like, I just want that type of once. I want to have, I want my fame. I want my 15 minutes like that. I feel like hearing your voice in an ESPN 30 for 30 trailer has got to be like a different, that's like a whole other level as far as goals in life, you know. Like, what was your reaction when you first heard your voice in the trailer?
First of all, I didn't believe that it was me, and I was like did I say that? Because this was months before when this thing happened. I didn't really remember everything that I said, and I was like, and the phrase I think that was in that trailer was something like, I could have punched the dude in the face or something like that. It was like the middle of a rant, you know. So, but clearly me, and it was kind of weird at first. I was like, okay, that, and that was before I kind of knew everything that was in the rest of the film. And I was like, okay, is that going to be it? Is that what people are going to hear? But, yeah, it was a weird feeling. And then, I mean, this, like we said, this production quality is so good, and it all just comes together in this crescendo of like, I hate Christian Laettner. And I'm like, whoa. That was wild. So it was cool. I mean, and then of course, you know, like you said, I kind of keep coming back to me in a lot of the film, and so that stuff gets clipped. And not to that extent that you were talking about, Riley, where I'm getting like, you know, people really pounding me on it, but obviously, you know, people lock into certain things that I said, and you know, always read it back to me. I always, my hope out of this, and you talk about you wanting to get like aggregated into this thing. I want to be a throwaway line in a rap song, like, so, you know, like something like that hater down in Christian Laettner or something like that. Yeah. I want it to be like referenced randomly in a rap song. That is still my dream in life. Maybe one day I can live that out. But if you know any rappers, then, you know, hook me up, guys. I would appreciate it.
I'm like, the only rappers, let's see, from North Carolina, J. Cole's a UNC fan, so cross him off the list. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if DaBaby has fans anymore.
Yeah, is he like a free man right now, or is he in prison somewhere? I don't know what's happening with him.
I know he had a lot of controversy for a while.
Yeah, for sure.
Those are the only two North Carolina rappers I know. But I'm sure there's a rapper out there with some Duke ties where maybe you can finagle that one day.
Cross my fingers, right? Yeah,
maybe we can get Harry Giles to drop a track. He's not busy doing anything else.
That's true. Wait. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, He signed a
10-day with the Lakers. Okay, God, yeah. Here we go.
Yeah,
that was the LeBron being like, you know what, like, we'll just give him 10 days, man. He's best friends with Jason Tatum. Maybe you know,
some, connections.
Yeah,
I can't harbor any ill will toward Harry Giles, though. Like, Harry Giles played like 10 games at Duke, and he played there the year where Carolina won a national title.
All
things considered.
And when he buds with like Pinson or something, didn't they?
Yeah, he and Pinson, they both went to Wesleyan.
Yeah.
Plus, Jacob is a huge Jason Tatum fan because he's a Celtics guy. So
I can't help it.
I got to out you on that.
That's the one Duke man that I don't hate.
Yeah, he's pretty good. I mean, but again, he was there when Carolina won. So,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's even better because my dad obviously loves Jason Tatum because he's from Boston, and his alma mater is the one who dropped off Jason Tatum in the tournament. So it's a win-win. True.
Boom. Yeah, everybody wins. See, JK, everybody wins.
So speaking of Duke in general, I'm like, actually, I got an idea for how we can close with Four Corners, just a tease for the listeners right now. But explain to us the premise of Duke. Of Duke Sucks. I mean, I think we can guess it. I have not read the book. I'll be fully transparent, but I do want to hear about what inspired Duke Sucks and then the sequel, Duke Still Sucks.
Yeah. So the original book actually came because Reed and I, my co-author Reed Tucker, we were doing a podcast. We did a podcast in 2010, like way before, you know, podcasts were a thing. It was, and I wish now we had like the recording materials that we had, because it was a pain in the ass to do it then. But so we used to do this Carolina basketball podcast, and we would end every episode with this week's reason why Duke sucks, you know, naturally. So we'd come up with a different reason every time, and just started to kind of collect these things. And so Reed, as I told you before, he's like an actual writer, and he was like, dude, Andy, we should put a book together. This is like, we've got all this material. I'm like, no, like, why would anyone, how could we do this? So that's kind of where the inspiration for the book came out. We ended up, you know, writing a couple sample chapters. Reed had a writing agent that ended up, you know, getting it in front of some publishing houses and you know, hit some luck and got the book, got a publishing deal or you know, a book deal. And so the way that we lay the first book out, if you haven't read it, we lay it out like almost like a court case. We have like a charge, like, you know, Duke is the dirtiest team. Duke is dirtier than a bus station bathroom. And we kind of go through all the things that they've done that are dirty and then trying to prove out the case. And so that was kind of the premise of the first book is all these things that people talk about, like they're a wannabe Ivy League school. And we kind of talk about the history of it. They're founded on tobacco money. They cause cancer, you know? So like all these things, like just kind of lay all these things out. We did a whole chapter on whether or not Coach K dyes his hair, you know, a whole deal. And so that was kind of the premise of the first book and just some funny little bits and stuff that we wrote about. And then so that, as I said, that came out in 2012 and, you know, did really well, but it came out like, and then the next, that the, when the book came out was Austin Rivers, like that 2012 game that was not mm-hmm. included in the first book. So over the years, you know, I mean, Grayson Allen happened, for God's sake. So we were, every time something would come up, we'd be like, oh, we'll put that in the sequel. Oh, we'll put that in the sequel. We'll put that in the sequel. We'd keep a little running list, but we never really kind of got off our butt and did it. Well, flash forward to 2022 and you know what happened, right? So Coach K, the farewell tour, the last game in Cameron, the final game, in the final four, where we send him into retirement, and Reed and I were like, okay, this is like the gods telling us we need to write this sequel, right? So it really, Duke Still Sucks, which is the book that came out last year, it basically just picks up from the moment the last book ended and examines the last 10 years, which, as it turns out, was like, that's right around the time that the Coach K went to the one and done route. He was still kind of that traditional Duke team. We ended up having to write three chapters on Grayson Allen because, I mean, you know, you have to. And then covered the Zion years. We had a whole chapter on the one and done thing called the semesterhood. And then we wrote, have a chapter in there about the 30 for 30 experience. And then, of course, the ending of you know, how everything ended with K and everything. And then did a little chapter about like, okay, what does this mean for the rivalry going forward? So that's kind of where it left off. Is it was kind of like, okay, we gotta check and see. 10 years ago, they still suck. They definitely sucked. Do they still suck? Yeah, they definitely still suck. So we'll see. Maybe in another 8 or 10 years ago, we'll have to you know, do another installment. And we've got a chapter with the court storming and Kyle Filipowski already, right? So they keep producing material for us. It's great. Yeah,
I know. He's such a warrior. I mean, he's playing He's playing through that broken knee and. High ankles. I mean, to be able to pull off a windmill with all those injuries, that's one of the most impressive feats that I've seen in college basketball.
Isn't it incredible to have your leg amputated and then 2 days later you come back and you have, you know, you can score.
And look, I'm going to go on the record and say, like, look, the court storming thing, I don't think a fan should ever be in a position to touch a player.
Agreed.
But the crying, and then me hearing that this dude's going to like miss the rest of the season because of it, that's the drama of Duke fans. And that's why books are written like Duke Sucks.
Exactly. Yeah,
I think I wrote a little blurb for Heat Check the day after it happened and just gave my thoughts on court storming, like three sentences. I'm like, people are already talking about this way too much. Essentially, like, court storming is part of what makes college basketball special. Yeah. That being said, like, these arenas got to have better security.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You can't have players or fans run into players. I also did say, like, I'll give Duke credit here. I don't think the whole Filipowski initiated the contact I thought was pretty ridiculous. Like, if you slow something down enough, you can see whatever you want. It looked like he was sort of getting – he just kind of, like, probably instinctively reacted when a fan was running toward him. I didn't think he, like, intentionally shoved anybody. However, with Shire saying, like, oh, he's not himself – 2 days later, and then 5 days later, he's throwing down a windmill. Like, you deserve to get roasted for that.
See, and that's the thing. Like, because I think about it in this lens, I would not want Armando to be in a position where he could get hurt by a fan. So I am 100% with that. Here's the difference. If that happened to Armando, there'd be, like, negative words, because he wouldn't say anything, he wouldn't care, he wouldn't cry, he wouldn't act like he was dead. Like, that's the issue. Like,
It is.
it's frustrating.
And I got, yeah, the media wouldn't fawn over it for 3 days straight, right? It'd be like, oh, Armando and Carolina would all of but okay, on to the next story. You know, it's right. Just like they just latch onto it, which makes it even worse.
Well, and then Steve Forbes, of course, he kind of bowed and kissed the ring and said that Court Storm should be banned.
Come on.
Sorry. Hopefully this Forbes seems like a cool dude. I hope this isn't burning bridges with him. I still respect you, Steve Forbes. But you kissed the ring, and now Wake has lost three in a row.
Yeah, see? Don't do that, dude. Come on. You know, well, I can say it.
I will say this. The thing that really hurt me is that Jay Billis has been one of the few guys who I actually like that is a Duke alum who covers the game. And then he basically is like, yeah, everyone who storms the court, just hold them there and give them the death penalty. And then it's like, dude, we're going to incarcerate 5,000 college students. Like, come on, dude. Do you think this is like the Hunger Games or something? Like,
seriously. It's ridiculous. See, I'm just filing all this away for the next book, boys. It's all filed away. Yes. Hey,
I will say, you bringing up the, like, kind of starting with the river shot to 2022. I mean, the river shot happened my freshman year, and I didn't grow up a Carolina fan. I didn't grow up a Duke fan either. I just grew up kind of neutral. Like, I'm from Charlotte. Neither of my parents are from North Carolina. I'm the only, I guess, native North Carolinian in my family. So I just kind of grew up, honestly, indifferent to it. I played football my whole life. That was the sport I gravitated to more. And then when I got to Carolina, it was like fully embracing the fandom and everything. But just you mentioning it, I was like, man, there's been, I know, like, the old heads will say the glory days of college basketball are dead, but there have been some great moments in this rivalry the past 10 years. When you look at, I mean, even those battles between, like, the Marvin Bagley team and the Joel Berry Theo Pinson senior year, I thought that 2019 season was like, well, I will say by the end of 2022, I think UNC and Duke were both sort of operating at, like, about their peaks as they could be. But 2019 mm-hmm. was like, those were two straight up elite teams. Either one of them could have won the national championship had some things broken differently. Like, the fact that we had Zion Williamson, RJ Barrett, Cam Reddish on a court against Cam Johnson, Nazir Little, Kobe White. Like, you have six dudes who are still in the NBA. I guess Trey Jones, I don't know if he's in the G League. He might be on a roster.
He plays like 25 minutes a night for the Spurs.
Really? Yeah. I didn't realize it was that many. I know the Spurs are bad. Man, I disrespect him saying G League, but you have Kobe White, who's going to be the most improved player this year. Just like the amount of talent, and obviously Zion's made all star teams. Like, they're it, yeah. I want to read both of these books, especially. I'm like almost more intrigued with the second one, just because I feel like this is like chronicles my fandom.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
As you guys know by now, we've partnered with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for the listeners and the viewers of the Field of 68 as we all get ready for the best month of the year, March Madness. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, you can use the bonus code FIELD150 and you will get $150 in free bets on your first wager with BetMGM, regardless of whether or not you win that first bet. Here's the best part. All you need to do is deposit and bet $5 of your hard-earned money. This is how you make it work. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using the bonus code FIELD150. That's FIELD150. Deposit at least $5 and place your first wager on any game. You will receive up to $150 in bonus bets regardless of the outcome of your bet. Just make sure you use that bonus code FIELD150 when you sign up. And remember, BetMGM is now available in one wallet in select states. As a New Jersey resident, this is super convenient when I have to go cover games in Philly or New York, which happens quite a bit. When you cross state borders, you just log into your existing account and fire away. You don't have to create a new account in each state. It's easy, it's simple, and it's clean. And most importantly, we have some fun stuff coming up for the conference tournaments and for the NCAA tournament. Bet insurance tokens, college hoops odds boost, and my personal favorite, a nice little parlay boost here and there. So download the BetMGM app and sign up today.
Well, and that's what it is. Like that, you know, that was the other reason for kind of writing it, is because we felt like there was a whole generation of folks who were building all these new memories, and you know, we're needed to kind of see it in writing. Like, so we got, I don't know if you guys know this too, but Tate Frazier, a good friend of ours, wrote the opening, the foreword in this recent book, and big reason why we wanted him to do that, because I think he does represent a lot of that generation of guys who are coming through. Like, they have whole memories. But I mean, you know, you were saying, like, yeah, the old heads, like, my experience was very Leitner oriented. That was kind of what my time frame was. But and oh yes, the rivalry has changed, and NIL and transfer portal, and then you know, one and done stuff. But honestly, each generation has their own thing, and it looks different. But like, you go talk to a current Carolina student, they hate Duke. They just know they're supposed to, and they do, because that's what's in front of them, and Duke is always going to Duke. And so it's just it will change, but man, it's always going to be there, because at its core, the two schools and the two fan bases are always going to be very, very different, and it's going to look different, but it's going to permeate for years and years to come. I'm certain of it.
Yeah, I think it's different on. I think the Duke side, obviously Roy leaves. Roy is just not really a hateable guy, but, you know, UNC structure is still the same. You're always going to have one or two guys that have been there for a while. Duke fans are probably going to inherit some form of hatred for them.
Right.
On the UNC side, however, I graduated in 22, which was obviously a wonderful year. And I feel like now, I think 2022 was kind of the last year of normalcy in the rivalry. And now it's like you said, you have to develop that hate for Shire. They do have more one and done. So it's like, who are you going to hate? I mean, you know, Filipowski, for example, he's gone after this year. He only played there 2 years. So it's like, who's going to be the JJ Redick? Who's going to be the Grayson Allen? And now it's like a whole new side, because it's Hubert and Shire. And it's just, it's going to be interesting to see what unfolds, especially because, you know, next year, Mondo is not going to be there. As much as I hate to say this, I would assume RJ probably leaves. It's just like, it's going to be interesting, because UNC is going to have a couple of one and dones of their own next year. So it's going to be crazy to see this play out over the next 8 to 10 years.
And it will be. I mean, you're right. Like, Shire isn't naturally a hateable guy, and Hubert, like we talked about, he's like one of the nicest dudes around. So I don't know that it's going to be as centered on the coaches like it was with Kay, but you know, I mean, you guys, yeah, Filipowski's gone, but they got a dude coming in next year that was like created in a factory to be a Duke player in Cooper Flagg. I mean,
God, I hate it though, because he's so good.
That's why though, JK, that's why he's going to be hateable, because you can't have the last, you have to be a good player like to be hateable, because you got like a, you know, so he's really good, but he's like a mold of a Dookie player, right?
That's
so
true.
Yeah.
Hot take though, I hated RJ much more than I hated Zion. I don't know if I'm in the
RJ Barrett. Yeah.
Yeah. I hated him really? So much more than Zion on that team.
I think I'm
I had a level of respect for how good Zion was. RJ is a certified scrub.
Yeah, there you go.
I kind of respected RJ low-key. I respected his grind, that he was like, this dude is clearly better than me, but I'm taking more shots. Like, I that for some reason funny. I really disliked Zion.
Oh, that grind like stayed the same in the NBA, believe me. He thought he was better than Jalen Brunson too. Now he thinks he's better than Scottie Barnes. So, I mean, he's...
Yeah, they shipped him off north back home, right? They were like, dude, you're getting in the way of Jalen Brunson in New York here. So, see ya. Get back to Toronto, buddy. Yeah.
On a more serious note, I feel like he RJ did play really hard and was, he tried on defense, which there have been plenty of one and dones to go through Durham who have not, you know, had the greatest motors. Maybe I don't want to sound like I'm sliding too many players, but I did kind of respect that he like played really hard at Duke. And I mean, of course my fandom is like, I like that he was the one who thought he should be taking shots in crunch time when they had a generational talent. But all right, so let's turn to this current team, and we're going to talk some UNC Duke this game coming up on Saturday and get into a little preview. But first, I want to hear from both of y'all just what you've thought about Carolina, particularly these past two games, because I think it seems like the ship got righted. I don't know if that's the right form. They righted the ship? Yeah, I think that's
sure.
Right.
Let's go with it. Yeah.
Okay.
I'll allow it. Yeah. I'm a writer. I can say yes. Cool. Yeah. It's all good.
Second half of the NC State game through the Notre Dame game was just very cathartic to see. Okay, they outscored State by 17 in the second half, held them to that 0-for-15 stretch. And then finally, it feels like really for the first time since the Duke game, it was like, okay, Carolina is handling business. They're doing what they're supposed to do against an inferior team and giving them no hope. And I get Notre Dame is bad. They have been playing really well. I'm a huge fan of Micah Shrewsbury. I think we're like 2 years away from him being a top three coach, like universally regarded, nationally regarded as a top three coach in the conference. Yeah, I think he's going to, you're already seeing it how his roster stinks. Like you look at it on the surface and it's like none of these dudes are seem like high major guys, and he's getting production out of them. In Carolina didn't allow them to have any hope. Like what did y'all make of these past, let's say, three halves of basketball?
Yeah. I mean, I think I agree with a lot of what you said. I feel like, you know, there was an inevitable lull in any season. You know, there's going to be kind of a lull, and Carolina had that 10 game, you know, win streak earlier in the year. They were playing really well. I think they hit a little bit of luck in there with some guys missing shots they normally would. It's just happened that lull came and we had some tougher games. But I also think the team, I mean, you know, I'm not on the team. I don't know any of these on the team. But it also feels like everybody reached a point in the season where they're like, okay, we know how to win, but it's really hard to maintain that every game. And they let down just a little bit through there. And it did feel like second half of NC State and especially that Notre Dame game, they were like, oh, yeah, in case everybody forgot that thinks that we don't know how to play, let me show you what we have, right? And so I do think, you know, this is a very mature team, and you know, they know that it's getting into crunch time. They needed to play well. And not that you can turn it on and off, but they showed exactly what you said. It's time to get serious, and it's time to put these teams down when we don't need to give them any hope. So I just hope they can carry that through. But I just think it's been a fun year, guys. Like, so, but these last two games is starting to gear up, and you're like, all right, it's on, it's time. You know, it's almost time for March. So I don't know, JK, what'd you see when you watch these games?
I'm going to go even further back to basically post Duke win. So the issue ended up being, you know, so you lose to Clemson, you lose to Syracuse, you basically escape Miami twice. It was a rough patch. And the thing you notice in those games is that the second Miami game, the Clemson game, the Syracuse game is the three-point variance. Like the teams were, you know, shooting. Clemson shot like 36%, and then all the other ones were like 40%, and even NC State shot like 45% from three in that game. Mm-hmm. I think that something that even, you know, me and Riley were guilty of it, but, you know, kind of panicking a little bit, you're like, oh my God, what's happened to the defense? But I think it's just the reality of you started ACC play with teams shooting like 24% against you. Three-point variance balances out. Now you've had the stretch where teams shot out of their mind, and then last night was finally like back to normalcy. And I think that's what we get the rest of the year, which is like, I'm not sure the defense ever. Yeah, like they got a little loose on some rotations. There were some effort concerns in the Clemson game and stuff like that. You know, then you got the Syracuse example where they just kind of had a generational shooting night. And that's just the reality of basketball. And I think now from this Duke game on Saturday onward, we're going to see, all right, we've seen the negative 3-point variance. We've seen the positive 3-point variance. Now we're probably going to get that like 30 to 32% against us. Things are going to settle back in. No need to panic. the team, you know, they get a 33-point win last night, and I think they just kind of went through the ups and the downs. I think they kind of started the season or conference play, especially with just absolute mixture of lockdown defense and a little bit of shot luck that withered a bit during the middle of the conference schedule. And now we're back. We're back on the normal playing field. I mean, I'm actually, you know, after the game last night, had they struggled in that game, I'd probably be feeling a bit different. But after watching them take care of business last night, I think coming into this game, conference play, March Madness, I think they're in the right spot.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. Yeah. And even to speak to the defense, you know, it's natural to have those lulls or have games throughout the course of a long season where maybe they're not as locked in or not as crisp in their communication. I did think, again, with Notre Dame, it sort of seems like you shut down Marcus Burton, you shut down Braden Shrewsbury. Taking out two guys probably is nowhere near as tough as, I mean, even a team like NC State where you have, I don't want to give them too much credit, but like,
they got a couple guys.
Yeah. But I thought, like, I mean, I thought RJ was fantastic defensively against Marcus Burton. I know Cormac spent a lot of time on him as well. Like, both of them were attached to his hip when getting around screens. And whoever wasn't, if it was RJ or Cadeau on Burton, it was Cormac chasing Braden Shrewsbury around screens or vice versa. Like, I thought the backcourt as a whole did a really good job of taking those dudes out of their game. And it's kind of something I would expect to keep going forward. I mean, we saw Cormac completely neutralize DJ Horn in the second half against NC State, trailed him, face guarded him, whatever he had to do. I mean, Cormac has been sneakily, dare I say, great defensively over the past, like throughout conference play. Mm-hmm. I think Cadeau is like the improvements he's made on that end of the floor have been just like he's grown by leaps and bounds since you go back to the live action scrimmage in November where it was like, how is this dude going to stay on the floor defensively going up against, you know, Paxson Wojcik or whoever he was guarding, like, and just seemed to be out of position. That was really good to see. The other thing I wanted to touch on, even these more so the State game, because the game was already handled really with what, like, within 15 minutes to go in the second half, I think any trace of hope Notre Dame had was wiped out. Yeah. But against NC State, I sort of thought UNC figured out some stuff late game offense as far as that execution goes. Having Cadeau, I mean, some of the buckets he got down the stretch, they were able to just spread the floor, get Cadeau one-on-one or get Cadeau a high ball screen and let him cook. And he's finishing around the basket at a high clip. I thought they, if it wasn't a high ball screen, had some other nice sets or actions to get him or RJ downhill. And that was really one of the main things I pinpointed after the two Miami games. It's like, I know I just cited the high ball screens working for Cadeau, but that can't be the only thing, you know, that Carolina does late in game. And we saw it in both Miami games where it was like, all right, run the shot clock down to 5 seconds, set a high ball screen for RJ and hope he draws a foul or makes it a shot. And you're definitely not going to get those calls on the road, even at home. You know, they're not just going to – refs aren't just going to bail you out with a foul if it's not working. So that was the most encouraging thing for me. But, yeah, hopefully they can keep this momentum up going into this Duke game.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So, I guess we can turn ahead to Saturday and looking at this Duke team who has played really well since they lost to UNC on February 1st. Per Bart Torvik's T-Rank metric, they've been the third highest rated team in the country in that stretch. Carolina, by comparison, has been 18th. What have y'all seen from Duke recently that, let's say, that would like scare you as a Carolina fan?
All right, JK, you take it, man.
Number one for me is guard play. Proctor has unfortunately kind of started to come back into his own a bit. Roach is obviously kind of the seasoned vet. Like, he's just going to make shots. And then McCain, he's the best player on the team. I mean, that's just, I don't think there's any denying that. Like, I hold my breath every time that kid pulls up for three in transition. It's scary. So that's kind of the concern. In the last outing, I think Duke shot 25% from three in the Dean Dome. Roach had a great shooting night. McCain played well. But the guard play is definitely concerning, especially with some of the 3-point performances we've seen UNC give up in the last month. That's scary. I'm not so much like I basically am just scared of Proctor because he was so bad in that last game. Gave him 2. However, I guess that's counterbalanced by the fact that Roach and McCain combined for like 43. So I think if as long as you can at least shut down one of those guys, I like the chances. There is one hidden nugget that's positive for North Carolina, though, that I don't think a lot of people were paying attention to.
All right.
Since the Duke game, in which Duke's game plan of send late doubles with Elliott Cadeau's man and allow him to shoot, Cadeau is a sneaky 33%, 4-for-12 since that game. So really? I'm just saying, if Cadeau's going to go, 2-for-6, that's going to be
that's
a
all
huge
you need.
Difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's so Riley, it's tough for me to say that Duke scares me. So let's just get that out of the way. Right. So I'm just going to play along here and say, but I kind of agree with what Jacob was saying. Like the guards before, I thought the guards would be the difference in the first game. Like that, this bigger guards tend to have, give Carolina guards, smaller guards trouble. Roach always seems to play well. He's quick, and he's always seems to kind of get his. So I do think you gotta, we were talking about earlier, like returning to the norm for the 3-point shooting, right? So I do worry that, like, yeah, they shot 26% in the other game. Does that mean they're going to shoot 42% in this game to balance it out? That's the part that it's the big equalizer. So to me, you got to run them off the 3-point line. You can't let McCain get easy looks and transition. And then you got to give it back to them, right? So you got to see if you can't get them in foul trouble at the other end. You got to have RJ driving, you got to have Cadeau doing his thing and see if you can keep those guys off the floor a little bit. So I think those are the things that you worry about as a Carolina fan is always, will they kind of get hot, especially at Cameron where that's their home floor and their crowd's going to be going crazy. But, hopefully by the end of the night, we're going to see all those little painted faces crying, which is what we all want as Carolina fans. But there's no doubt they're playing better. They're playing better, but I think Carolina has made some improvements too. And so I still think if both teams are playing at an equal level, Carolina is slightly better this year. And I think that's kind of what played out in the first game. So doesn't mean they're going to win, but I do think Carolina's just got a little bit of an edge on Duke this year if everything's equal.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think Carolina's better defensively, and it's really not particularly close. Duke has been better defensively recently. I'll give them that. Same time, I'm a little bit skeptical of the competition level. They beat a lot of bad teams in that stretcher, have kind of blown out a ton of bad teams. I feel like still Mark Mitchell's kind of the only player I trust defensively on that team. I know Proctor gets a lot of credit. He's a good defender. I still am not ready to say he's a great defender. I still even go back to that first game, and it felt like after the first like 25 minutes of face guarding RJ Davis, UNC was up 10, and he's like, okay, I'm done. I've done my job and checked out. But I give Carolina the edge defensively, and I know what the numbers say. I know KenPom has Carolina as the 26th best offense. They have Duke as the 7th best offense. I think UNC is better than 26. think they're better than the what they have shown through the metrics, which, yeah, all the data nerds can come after me if you want. But I know Evan Miakawa, he'll vouch for me. So
there you go.
So I think Carolina is slightly better. But, yeah, what frightens me the most, worries me, is just Roach and McCain, that combo. Every time they shoot, I feel like it's going in. You cannot let them get those transition threes like you mentioned, Andy. You got to take care of the ball, because if it's a live ball run out, one of them is pulling, they're probably hitting it, and that's going to ignite the fan base. It's going to ignite the crowd, and it's very easily can spiral out of control. You saw that happen with their game against NC State down the stretch, and it wasn't even in Cameron. It was in PNC, the House of Horrors for Duke, and like down the stretch, I think they had a three-pointer from Roach and then a four-point play from McCain as soon as State had cut it to double digits, and the game was over. Yep. Like, it didn't get closer than that. So it's those two. I trust Armando to hold his own even round two against Filipowski. Hopefully he gets the better of him like he did in the first matchup. And then this will transition a little bit into what makes you confident in UNC, but I'll share mine is, yeah, I believe Armando can at least go head to head with Flip, if not win that matchup. And I think I'm going to call my shot now. I think Harrison Ingram breaks out of this little mini shooting slump he's been in and catches fire in Cameron.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I think Carolina's advantage is clearly in the post. I mean, you have Flip, but he's kind of more of a four. He's not really a true post player. Then you've got the other dude, the transfer, who looks like he's 38 years old. I can't remember the dude's name, but
Ryan Young.
There you go. Yeah. So, I mean, Armando was pretty dominant. You know, he did really well against them. So I see that going again. I think Harrison Ingram is the X factor for me, Riley. I think you're right. I think he's the guy that they don't really have a great answer for. Sure, they can throw some different dudes at him, but I think he's the guy that could break out. And you know, that's to me, I think Armando is really confident going in that building, right? RJ is, they're going to try to lock him up again, but RJ knows that, you know, this is, I'm going to own this place. And so I just think, you know, when you look at the experience we have, you look at the confidence, you look at Armando, the finality of the season for Armando is coming, right? He's started to play at a different level. I just think that's what makes me confident is that our guys know the other big thing here too is, it'd be one thing if we were going into this game with just not, you know, we're playing against Duke, that's enough, but these guys are clearly want to have the ACC regular season title outright. They've talked about it. They know what's on the line. They do this. They're hanging a banner with nobody else's name on it. No sharing of this banner. So I think that these guys are going to come out locked in, focused. You saw it against Notre Dame. They were 100% locked in. And that's what makes me confident going into this game.
I would say for me, I don't care how many times they replayed the too little clip to try to get Flip hype for this game. In reality, he is too little to guard Armando. I mean, worst case scenario for UNC is that Flip balances that matchup out with an elite offensive performance. He is a terrible defender. He has slow feet. He's not strong enough to guard Armando. I'm not worried about that matchup at all. Ingram is a much better version of Mark Mitchell. Not worried about that matchup at all. What makes me feel confident is that RJ, although he hit two of the biggest shots of the game, was 5 of 14 against Duke last time out. That's probably not happening again. Cadeau was 1 of 9, had an absolutely horrible night from the field. I mean, Cormac was 3 of 7. I think Cormac's actually going to play really good in this game. He's been shooting the ball really, really well of late. I don't know. I think when you look at it, it's like, who am I going to trust more? Am I going to trust, we can throw Ingram, RJ, and Armando out of the picture for UNC, and let's throw McCain, Roach, and Flip out of the picture for Duke, and then look at the rest of the bulk. And I'm sorry, but I'm going to take Cadeau, Cormac, Trimble, Washington, and Withers every time before I take Mitchell, Proctor, and then I'm supposed to be scared because Sean Stewart played a really good game against a really bad team. Like, I'm just, I don't trust Duke's depth. I trust UNC's depth, And I don't know, like, it's very hard to sweep Duke. I get that, fully aware of that. I don't know if Shire is going to change his game plan from last time. I think they're still going to try to key in on RJ and make everyone else beat them, and they will lose if they do that again. That's the difference.
Yep, I think you're right.
Not, and I will say to their depth, not having Caleb Foster is a huge hit.
Huge.
Yep. He's super talented. Could type of dude who could come off the bench and swing a game. Do we want to go ahead and do predictions?
Sure. I just can't go. I go first, and the guest.
Yeah,
goes
you
got.
I can go first to save him if you'd like me to.
Because I want to hear how you got. I know I've heard the past podcast. So let me hear you how you make it, and then I'll chime in.
Okay. Well, if you've listened to podcasts, you know how this works with me, Andy. I am the. I am ever since the Kentucky game, I am not allowed to pick UNC to win in big games because every time I do, they lose.
Okay.
So I'm going to stick with that mindset. I'm going to say Duke takes round two, 81-76.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right.
Okay. We'll give Andy the last pick.
All right. There you go. Good.
I actually been going back and forth, but after Carolina lost to Syracuse, I looked at the remaining schedule. And I said, I might have even said it on the show, Carolina's either going 5-1 or they're running the table. Because at that point, I thought we had seen too big of a sample size from that 10-game winning streak of too much good basketball. Even going back to like the Tennessee game, the Oklahoma game, I even thought they played well in Kentucky after they got through the initial, like those turnovers that plagued them for the first 10 minutes or so. I'd like to think I know what a really good Carolina team looks like after, you know, a decade plus of fandom. And this looks like a really good team to me. So I'm going to, so I was like, yeah, they're going to go 5-1 around the table. 5-1 will be the worst outcome, was at worst what they can do. I'm going to roll through on the table and they get the dub. I think it's going to be, man, I like that 81-76 score because I think Carolina is going to have to probably score close to 80 to win this game. Oh, I'm going to say it's 85-75, and I'm gonna say it's gonna be like 70-76 with like 2 minutes to go. Carolina's up. Either Roach misses a big three because Cormack just has a maniacal defensive play. UNC gets the ball. Duke has to start fouling, and they're able to extend the lead a little bit further.
So you think UNC is gonna score more than 62 points?
I do think UNC.
That is an inside joke for anyone who listens to the Duke and UNC preview.
Yeah, one of the field of 68. Yeah, go ahead, Jacob. Sorry.
One of the Duke guys said that in round one of the matchup at the Dean Dome that UNC was going to lose 68-62.
He's an idiot. Okay, I don't even know who this guy is, but just I'm not employed by Field of 68, so I can just say that safely. So, my God. Okay. All right. So predictions, guys. I think this is going to be a shootout. I've just got a feeling that both teams are going to come in here. Duke a little loose defensively, as we talked about. Carolina is going to let some things happen. There's going to be some transition threes. I think we're going to get a shootout. I think we're going to see a high scoring game. I think it's going to be one of those classic fun games to watch where all those idiots will be like, man, that's a great college basketball game. Gee willikers, you know, it's like, no, it's Duke UNC, you know? So I think Carolina is going to get the win. I think it's going to be 93-87. I think it's going to be a high scoring game. It's going to be back and forth. Carolina's going to pull away late and Duke's going to, you know, maybe hit a late three to cut at that score. But I think it's going to be a barn burner. I think it's going to be a fun game. I think there's going to be at least one incident in the game. There's going to be a shove, a push, you know, a getting in your face. And, you know, it's going to be another classic. So I think we can get sweep. And then who knows next week in the ACC tournament if we see them or not. But I think that's what I'm feeling. I'm feeling a shootout for Saturday. So it'd be fun to watch, though.
I'm going to go ahead and say if there is an incident, Harrison Ingram will be involved.
Right up there. He'll be right in the middle of it, right? Yeah. No matter where he is, he's right in the middle of it, right?
See, it happens, so. I just feel like we saw what Harrison Ingram did in the Dean Dome and just his vibe, his persona, the way he is. God, I feel like this Cameron crazy crowd is going to just put him on 10 and he is going to have a field day.
Yeah, you won't be able to wipe the smile off of that dude's face. No, it's going to be great.
Like, I don't know, man. I said it the last time we did the Duke UNC preview that Harrison Ingram was hands down the X factor and he played insane. I mean, I think in every big game, Harrison Ingram is the X factor because when he's hitting shots from the outside, that dude is impossible to guard because the moment he hits one and you close out too hard, he's bye. Yeah. And he's too big. And it's just, I don't know, man. I just am thinking about the plays now of like when Cadeau just absolutely cashes two of those wide open threes. And every Duke fan's going to be like, bro, this is BS, man. He's like a 27% shooter.
Yeah, of course.
And I'm going to be like, you guys haven't watched the last 8 games, I see.
I love that you brought that up with Ingram, and I'll say this, and then we can move on. We'll close it with four corners. But, the knock on Ingram at Stanford was, like, he just tended to disappear out of games. Like, he would float in and out. Like, some of my West Coast cohorts who write for Heat Check said that was, like, basically their scouting report of him, like, watching Pac-12 games. But he has been that guy in every big UNC game. He had 20 against UConn, 20 against Tennessee. It was 21 against Duke, 22 against NC State. Like he he's elevated himself in rivalry games. I think there's something where he just has a feel for the moment, and I expect that to show itself on Saturday. So let's close it down with four corners. This idea came to me when Jacob said he liked Jason Tatum. I want to give me two Duke players who you hate the most, two Duke players who you can't stand. I also want to hear if there are two players who, like, you kind of sort of maybe like.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I'm sorry to say. You can start positive if you want, then end with the negative one so we keep that rivalry week hatred going. But, like, you know, the good thing about the UNC-Duke rivalry is we are repulsed by that university. We hate them. Like, it's we make fun of them, call them nerds, whatever. But, you know, with these two programs being two of the – I mean, honestly, like two of two, but you could say two of the four best programs ever. There is that level of respect that I think makes the rivalry greater. And so that's where I want to know if there are any Duke players who you like secretly kind of like.
Oh, who's going first here? What's our order of operations?
Call it Riley.
All right. I can go first since I have mine planned. Number one, my most hated Duke player, Tyus Jones. And I'm putting him there because he was Duke won the national championship my senior year at Carolina. Tyus Jones ripped my heart out in the Dean Dome. Carolina had a lead late. He hit like back-to-back threes and it was over. So he's number one. I kind of want to put Trey Jones number two and just like throw the whole Jones family in there because I get Grayson Allen again, going back for like my fandom since I've been in school, Grayson Allen could make a case, but I also feel like UNC beat plenty of Grayson Allen teams to where he was fun to hate, but it wasn't like, oh, this Grayson Allen dude keeps beating us. Like Carolina had his numbers a good bit, whereas the Jones family just like tortured UNC between Tyus's 1 year and then Trey's sophomore year where they won on that crazy missed shot. So I'll mix it up and I'll go with the Jones family for one and two. Duke players that I kind of like, there was something about Luke Kennard just being an absolute bucket, particularly his mid-post game, and he never talked trash. He would just fiddle with his hair as he got back on defense. I found that kind of endearing. So I would throw Luke Kennard there. Second that I kind of like is Trevor Keels. Again, it's easy to like the players that Kennard was there the year UNC won the national championship. So it's nice to have a year where it feels like UNC triumphed over them. Keels doesn't feel as threatening. He was 1-2 against UNC, lost to them in the final four. I like cheering for like big husky guards who are just snipers. And Keels was a pretty good interview too. So like
he was only a sniper against UNC though.
Yeah, what did he shoot, like 30% that season? But he had some he had some big games.
Yeah, he did.
I thought Keels was – I mean, I know he's – I think he's is in the G League. I kind of thought he was going to be a first-round pick based on his upside, and I don't know, obviously has the frame to be a physical defender. I don't – I wouldn't say he's necessarily was ever a good defender, but, yeah, there you could talk yourself into it, but.
I respect that. I respect it.
All right, who's next, Riley?
Andy.
All right. I mean, this is hard. You're asking me to ask me if there are Duke players that I like. So let's just get that out of the way. This is very, very difficult for me, and I probably need some sort of strong liquor in here to get this the words out of my mouth. I'll go opposite. So I mean, the first thing I have to say in service of hated, Christian Laettner's got to be the guy, right? I mean, there's a movie. I was in the movie, you know, I gotta keep Christian Laettner on the list. I think second, I mean, there's a lot of guys. I love the Jones brothers pick, by the way, that to me, they're the reason that the head snap is in the college game right now, which I freaking hate. You know, you dribble, oh, snap your head, it's a foul. So love that pick. I won't repeat it. I do have to go back to somebody we've already talked about, and that's Austin Rivers, right? Mm. So, I mean, was there 1 year, killer shot against Carolina, and just an all-around jerk from everything that I've seen in the league, and I just can't stand the dude. He just reeks of dookiness and arrogance, and I can't stand him. So, and that's, you know, even with JJ Redick and Austin, Grayson Allen and all those guys aside. So those are my two hated. I think for my likes, I'll go a little more recent. There have been guys over the years that I thought, you know, like a Brandon Ingram, who I thought should have come to Carolina. I'm with you, Jacob. I kind of like the Jason Tatum a little bit, but I'll go recent. I will actually say Jeremy Roach, as much as he kills us, can you imagine him as a Carolina point guard? Like he would shred. Like he would just be so good in a Carolina uniform. And the fact that he's friends with Armando, like he actually kind of seems like he might be a good dude. And Riley, this is going to kill you. So you're sitting down, so brace yourself. I kind of liked Zion. Okay. Stay with me here.
I just didn't
like the fact that he chose Duke, and I didn't like the way that the media treated him. But man, that dude, just pure, like, watching him play basketball, oh my God, so fun. And I was at the game when he was on his visit and sitting at Carolina, sitting beside Phil Ford. Like, I was like, this dude is coming to Carolina. I just knew it. And he didn't. So I hate to rile you up, man, but that's my boy. I would like to have seen him in Carolina Blue.
I sort of get where people are coming from, but I can't put myself back in the mental space that year and be like, yeah, this was sick. Cause I had so many Carolina friends that were like, okay, Loki, I kind of like Zion. And I'm like, stop losing sight of the hatred. And I get that I'm the one who brought up this topic, and I'm having us name Dukies who we like kind of like during rivalry week. But we also, I don't know, at the same time, it's like, we're the better program, so we can throw them a bone and name some guys we like.
And with Zion, we beat him every year. So it's all good. All right, JK. He's looking at him. He's chomping at the bit over there. He's ready. Listen. He's ready. Let's go.
Okay. So one of these guys I hate for personal reason. One of these guys I hate just simply for the fact that I think they are complete ass. So number one is AJ Griffin. Because my senior year, I sat at the Dean Dome from 5:30 a.m. onward to watch that man have the most generational performance of his entire lifetime with my own eyes. The dude couldn't miss. He is – it was insane. Like, all right, so I'm watching Paolo warm up. I'm like, you know what? I could see it in Paolo. This kid's going to be a freaking amazing NBA player. You know, I'm watching everybody. I'm watching Trevor Keels. I'm like, holy crap, this dude is built like an NFL running back. Like, I'm looking at it all. And then I'm looking at AJ Griffin, and I'm like, you know, AJ Griffin, like, he's got a nice little bag to him. Like, he's a decent scorer, but I just don't see it. And he proceeded to not miss that entire night. We got drugged through the mud. I was up for like 36 straight hours in the risers. It was a horrible, horrible senior experience. Number two, I just think that this dude is a complete bum. I don't like the way he looks, and I just think he sucks, and that is Rodney Hood. I just cannot stand Rodney Hood.
I love that.
I have no explanation for it. It was a toss-up between him and Rashid Suleiman. So, I mean, we're there. I mean, oh, Suleiman's close. He's got to be like 2B, but I just think they both suck. Now, for the two I like, number one, I mean, come on. If you listen to the show, you know this. Jason Tatum, that's my franchise player, man. He's going to be a Celtic for his entire career. Eventually, he's going to bring banner number 18 to Boston. I genuinely think, too, like, Tatum's a good dude. All he does is play basketball, hang out with Deuce. Like, he's never been in the news for anything bad. He seems like a really good guy. Like, I've never heard anyone say anything bad about him. The only thing he's done that people hate on him for was, like, the corny Kobe stuff. But, like, I mean, dude, like, he's a pretty likable guy. And the second one, oh, this is tough because it's weird that I like this guy because he won a championship at Duke. But I just think he seems like a hell of a guy, and that's Quinn Cook. I just feel like Quinn Cook seems – he gives me Joel Berry vibes.
Yep.
Is that fair to say? Sense.
That's like the exact role, yeah. For
he's got that dog in him. Led a team to a title. They both just seem like incredible dudes off the court. I genuinely can't hate on Quinn Cook. I think he was just an extremely good basketball player. Yeah, that's my two.
I will still hate on Quinn Cook because he was on that title team that ruined my senior year. But I understand it. But I love the AJ Griffin pool because I always thought AJ Griffin seemed like a good dude too. Like he's on like his social media, like his Instagram.
That one is strictly personal, bro. He but ruined yeah, he, my he day.
Yep. He literally turned into Jesus on a basketball court.
He did. It was crazy.
That was, yeah, generational. All right. That's all we have time for today. It's a bit of an abrupt ending. Let me say thanks again, Andy Bagwell, for being here. That was a lot of fun. Appreciate talking hoops with both of y'all as always. Getting a little bit into the stories behind Duke sucks and Duke still sucks. I will be looking those up on Amazon, maybe placing a little order later tonight. You sold me. Hopefully you sold some of the listeners as well. And, you know, go out and watch I Hate Christian Laettner if you haven't yet. On behalf of Jacob Harabatsis, this is Riley Davis. We'll be breaking this game down next week, talking some conference tournament stuff. And you might see Jacob and I on some other YouTube channels as well, talking ACC tournament. So a little tease for that as well. So we'll talk more about that next week. But best of luck to the Heels this week. Beat Duke, get the sweep done, and let's get this outright ACC championship.
Bring out the brooms.